In these bleak days, humanity is at a breaking point. Economies are tanking, the woke mob is canceling everything, and the little guy, who's just trying to run a small business, is getting screwed from both ends. But not all is lost. Amidst the chaos, two men offer up their voices in the darkness, dropping 2,000-pound laser-guided truth bombs on today's lunacy. Introducing the Sirens of Sanity, David Pridham and L. Bradley Sheaf.
Dark side of the moon, there is an eclipse. It's a once in a lifetime deal.
I have to admit to not understanding the whole eclipse. And it seems like, again, as you said, everyone says it's a once in a lifetime, never going to happen again. It's an amazing thing if you get to see it. There was one not long ago. I remember this whole shenanigans with the glasses. And I don't get it. But if that's your thing, enjoy it. Dark Side of the Moon, fantastic song from a fantastic album. So I'm happy about that. And the rest of it, I just admit to not getting.
Of course, David Pridham and Brad Sheaf, we are here on the We Mean Business IP Frequently podcast. You can find us each week here, except for vacation weeks, of course, and various other events. You can find us on the iHeart Radio podcast network. Also, other podcast networks. We're on Spotify, Apple, among others. And I saw us on Spotify this week as I was running through some of these, the new Rob Reiner JFK podcast. You hear about that?
I did not hear about that. No. Rob Reiner is doing a JFK podcast?
He has done. He did it with Soledad O'Brien, who's the left-wing journalist. And he got one of the JFK conspiracy guys to record this with him. It's like an 8-episode arc about the JFK assassination. And at the end, they name names. They name the names of the shooters. And they all are like these French expatriates who came to America and killed JFK.
French expatriates.
Expats. It's had millions and millions of listens. So it's sort of regalvanizing the whole JFK community. So you got that, and then I also started listening to this new Substack. Substack?
I don't. I assume it's a stack that's under another stack, hence the name.
Sub, yeah. It's just these different sites on this platform, Substack, where they provide data, information, documents, and I found this one on the JFK thing, and it's written by an ex-Washington Post journalist who reported a lot on the CIA from back when the Church Committee was having its hearings. And this guy does a daily update on the JFK assassination, and he does a weekly forum where if you're part of the Substack, you can join in, and he does like an hour a week where he just takes questions from random people, just questions. And so that's fascinating. It's fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So other than that, in perusing, I don't think we're on Substack, but in perusing Spotify, IP Frequently was recommended to me, which is they know their audience. And of course,
they do know their audience. Yeah.
You can learn more about us on our website, ipfrequently.com, and you can follow us anywhere you have a social media presence at IP_frequently. And if now we can focus on what's really important. I don't know if you saw the latest polls, but the latest polls in the battleground states they just came out with. Trump is leading in all of them except Wisconsin, which is a tie. And then when you add RFK Jr. and he's leading in all of them, but they're all within the margin of error, but except for like a couple where Trump is ahead by like 4 or 5. But it seems like right now Trump is peaking, if you will. And I don't know that necessarily that's good for
P-E-A-K or P-E-E-K?
Probably a little of both. Speaking of that, we saw this, my wife and I watched this thing, Jerry Falwell Jr., that whole story?
Falwell, was he a TV preacher guy?
His dad was Jerry Falwell, the TV preacher guy who took over the 700 Club. Okay. And he was the guy who kind of had like a pig face.
Indeed. Yeah.
He was the president of Liberty University.
Right, right, right. Did he found it? I think it was founded by. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, he founded it.
So he has a son, obviously.
He has a son who named Jerry Falwell Jr.
There you go.
And so Jerry Falwell, they have this big special on the TV the other day, this documentary about Jerry Falwell Jr. and his life and everything, because he had to resign from Liberty University several years ago. And I never really followed it. I knew he had to resign because he was had some alcohol related issues. But turns out this guy was this is what this documentary says. So I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what the documentary says. They've got this kid on there. It's like this 25-year-old pool boy, right, who looks like a poor man's Lorenzo Lamas. And he's out there and he's telling this story about how this guy, Jerry Falwell Jr.'s wife, coerced him to come back to the hotel one day where he was a pool boy at this hotel. So she convinced him to come back up to a room. He goes back to the room. And as they're entering the room, she said, "The only thing is my husband's in here too." And so then she had this torrid affair with this pool boy. And the husband would sit there. Jerry Falwell Jr. allegedly would sit there and film it and like watch this whole thing. And so does this
constitute a throuple? Are we back in Thrupleville here? What's going on here?
I don't know if it's a throuple or not. I don't know if it's because if the third member of the throuple is, maybe it is, maybe it was. I mean, I think it was just, he was there.
It's kind of a virtual throuple. If he's just filming it, I think it's a vruple.
Of Ruppel, but he was always there. He said he was always the husband was always there. Mm-hmm. And then the husband got the pool boy involved in some he said, basically, we're going to give you some money to invest in real estate. So they started doing that. And then
how do we go from what is obviously, you know, not worth talking about in terms of this odd Ruppel to real estate investing? Was it sort of like a bribe for the kid to keep his mouth shut? Or
I don't know, because they were still doing the thing. The kid had like a girlfriend and he was hiding it from the girlfriend. And then they get him involved in the real estate thing. And they basically gave him this money to invest. And then he got hooked in with these two Cubans from Miami who were like, you know, as soon as this kid and his dad, the dad's a realtor. And so the dad got the money. They invested in some Quality Inn hotel. And then as soon as the dad and the kid found out what was going on, they bribed Falwell. So they reached out. They basically said, you know, you got to give us like $1 million or something, some crazy number. And so they paid that.
So the kid and the dad. So wait, now I'm confused. So when you say the kid and his dad,
yeah,
is that the kid who was sleeping with Falwell's wife while being videotaped? Okay.
So we'll call him the pool boy. The pool boy gets.
Okay.
The pool boy gets these two Cubans in Miami, father and son, to be the people that will tell him what to invest in. So do that, uh-huh, and they buy something, and then the Cubans immediately want out, and they say, "You have to pay us like $2 million or something crazy." And they said, "Well, it was weird because you're just a real estate broker, so you're just finding the property. You're not getting a piece of it, and you're certainly not getting the whole purchase price." Mm-hmm. And then he somehow, the Cuban kid, mm-hmm, had a picture of this whole vruppel, I guess you're calling it vruppel, mm-hmm, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And he allegedly, according to the pool boy, that was the focus of the bribery attempt.
Blackmail at that point, I think.
Blackmail, bribery, yeah, whatever. Yeah, blackmail, mm-hmm, I guess. Blackmail. And mm-hmm, and so they're blackmailing Jerry Falwell. And Jerry Falwell at this point was being wooed. This is back in 2016. So he's being wooed for his endorsement by Donald Trump. And so allegedly Michael Cohen, who was Trump's fixer at the time, mm-hmm, got involved, and he, quote unquote, according to the pool boy, quote unquote, did a favor for the Cubans to get them to lay off Jerry Falwell. But then Michael Cohen had the pictures. And then the guy endorsed Trump. So this is this big web. And then the whole documentary is about, mm-hmm, how awful Trump was. And like the kid, the pool boy, is talking about how Trump hates Muslims. And none of it makes any sense because you're getting further away from the Ruppel and you're getting further away from this whole, you know, there's no, other than the kid saying it, there's no proof that Trump was involved in any way. And then you've got this kid trashing Trump. And in the environment we are in, if Trump actually did all this stuff, you would think that he would already be in jail for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if Trump has done anything untoward, someone's coming after him for it. Obviously, we have plenty of evidence of that. So let me just get this straight. So someone did a documentary about, you know, a bizarre sexual fetish that Jerry Falwell Jr. and his bride were engaging in with a pool boy. But the point of the documentary was none of that. The point of the documentary was that Trump is bad.
It was ironic. Yeah, it was Trump is bad, transgender people. And then they started talking about the whole Muslim bad. Yeah, it was all about how Trump is bad. It was crazy. Didn't make any sense.
I mean, if there's obviously a certain very large percentage of the population of America that when I first heard this term, I discounted it. I just said, well, this is crazy. But I believe the term is the Trump derangement syndrome, right? Where there are just a certain large percentage of people in this country that are driven to a point of near madness by just the very idea of Donald Trump, which, again, when I first heard this, I'm like, that's not a thing. You know, people don't like him. I understand that, but that's not. But I am beginning to believe more and more after having some conversations with folks who are otherwise normal people, right? Who I know relatively well. They have families, they have jobs, you know, they're just seem to be, you know, sort of every man or every woman who will bring all conversations around to Donald Trump just so they can then, you know, all by their onesie, right? I mean, you're just listening to them talk, right? So you're physically present. You were previously having a conversation about, you know, life in general. Somehow they take that conversation, which has nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with the election, nothing to do with Donald Trump. They will slowly spin that to talking about Donald Trump. And then as they begin to talk about Donald Trump, all of their own accord, right? No one has prompted them to talk of him. They start to just get super riled up, right? And just kind of pushing themselves, you know, to madness because they have begun to talk about Donald Trump out of nothing. I mean, they just did it on their own, right? And so now I'm beginning to believe that this Trump derangement syndrome is a real thing that many people suffer from. And it is, you know, 10 years ago, if you were to say, hey, people are going to start creating documentaries and pseudo, you know, news content, whether it's just audio or video or both, that is, you know, going to be about one topic, but they're going to find a way to make it about some completely unrelated topic. And when they get to that topic, they're just going to drive themselves nuts, right? They're just going to convince themselves it's the end of the world. And you would say, well, wait, hold on, let me get this straight. They're going to start off with topic A. Yes. They're going to morph that without apparent cause into topic B all by themselves. No one's going to force them to do this. Yes. And then as they talk about topic B, they're just going to begin to freak out, get all riled up, angry, upset, and convince themselves the world's over. And they're going to do this all by themselves. No one's going to force them to do this. Yes, you've got it. That's correct. See, no one would believe that. And yet here we are, buddy. And so I think that this Trump derangement syndrome, TDS, must be a thing.
Oh, it's definitely a thing. People just cannot wait to talk about it, kvetch about it. I mean, this kid, it's not like the kid didn't. I mean, apparently he was like taken in by the Falwells because there were pictures of him like next to Trump with the wife and the husband. I mean, pictures. And clearly Trump, and he's got the thumbs up, and they're, you know, he's at some Trump event. They zoom. So, you know, he certainly went to Trump events and got some photo with him and the Falwells, which is just so freaking, the whole thing is so freaking bizarre. I don't get it, but
it's bizarre.
Yeah. It's just insane. But anyway, I don't even recommend it. We stopped watching it halfway through because the kid, I was like, what? Why is this kid?
How did you start watching it? I mean, I get stopping watching it, but how did you start watching it?
It was on Hulu. It was a documentary on Hulu about, and I didn't, it basically represented itself as the downfall of the president of Liberty University. And so it's like, okay, this will be interesting. So we started watching it. And then halfway through, the kid, it just turned pivots to this kid talking about Trump. And I was like, you know, there's no way this, the whole story sounds a little fishy, but apparently there are pictures. And so I don't know, but not the Trump part was all made up, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And the good news is Trump is doing just fine. He's selling those. I think he sold out of those gold sneakers. Now he's selling Bibles. You see that? Selling Bibles.
He's selling Bibles? Why is he doing that?
$60 Trump Bibles.
He's selling $60 Trump Bibles. Yeah, what version of the Bible is this? What translation do we know?
I want to say it's King James, but let's see. Trump Bible. I want to say it's King James, but I'm not 100% sure. But so he's selling these things for $60. The proceeds go to his campaign, maybe his legal defense fund or something. And you know, it's I mean, generally, I think it's a good thing. And then I don't know if you've seen the news now on, you know how last week we talked about Nicole Shanahan, who's RFK Jr.'s running mate, the former investor in patent businesses, apparently. Turns out now they're doing a little digging. The press is, you know, because here's where they can destroy RFK Jr. They did a little digging and they found out that her first marriage, I guess, to an investor named Jeremy Krantz. You know him? Familiar with his work?
Krantz with a C or with a K?
K. K. Krantz.
No.
Yeah. No. So in any event, she was married to him back in 2014. And I guess right after she got married, she met Google billionaire Sergey Brin and divorced Krantz with a K after 27 days, citing fraud. And then married Sergey Brin.
By herself or by him?
I think it's probably, I mean, if I had to guess, it was probably by her, but I think she was saying by him.
Well, okay. So her story is she marries some guy named Krantz with a K. Yeah. So I don't know him. And then shortly after marrying this gentleman, or, you know, perhaps even before, she runs into Sergey Brin, who obviously very wealthy, founder of Google. And suddenly her marriage to Krantz is no longer the thing, right?
Literally suddenly. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah. And so she ends that marriage citing quote unquote fraud.
Yeah.
Well, she sounds like the kind of person who probably should be involved in American politics. So.
She also allegedly had an affair with Elon Musk that ended the Sergey Brin marriage, but Musk denies it. So I don't know, but it's, you know, it's interesting. It's,
well, it makes sense that, you know, a politician would tie themselves to this gal.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it is what it is, but rather disappointing. Let's see next. What else did you see? Speaking of the Titanic, we're talking about the Titanic earlier. Did you see this whole cruise line deal, the fiasco out of Africa?
No.
Well, apparently there are, these cruises that go to these islands off the coast of Africa. Where is this island? It's actually near, surprisingly, they go there. It's near Senegal, I guess. This Norwegian cruise line goes out. And yeah, have you been on a cruise?
I have been on one cruise. I got to tell you, it was not my, you know, favorite thing. But I've been on one, yes. Long time ago.
Was it with Don and Fuani?
No, this was prior to my acquaintance with either Don or Fuani. This was over 30 years ago. So no,
they're currently on a cruise in Asia right now. But in any event, there's this cruise in the off the coast of Africa, and okay. It's a Norwegian cruise. They're just going like to all these different places, godforsaken places, and okay. And you know, they do like these little junkets off the boat. So if the boat docks, then you can go off the boat and you can go do a tour. Or you can go, I guess, have lunch or whatever. You just get off the boat, right?
Okay. You're tootling around the continent of Africa on a boat, and occasionally you disembark to enjoy the the various and sundry entertainment opportunities on land. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Right. So I guess the boat has a number of these junkets, if you will, where people go on these tours, and then there are other people who just get off the boat and they go do private tours, right? Where you go with someone you meet on the dock, I guess. And I guess this group of people, like five or six people, I think one of them was pregnant, one of them had like some heart condition, go on this junket with some African dude. They were on the island of Sao Tome, S-A-O-T-O-M-A, Sao Tome? Sao Tome?
Sao Tome.
And so they go off, they go on this cruise, this junket, they go to get back on the ship. And by the time they get back, the ship has sailed. The ship is out to sea. So they were left on this island by the captain. I guess the captain knew they were there, but he basically said, screw it. They have to be back at a certain point in time. They didn't make it. So these people then they're stuck on this island. They have nowhere to go. It looks like they had to fly with multiple stops to reach a place called Banjul, B-A-N-J-U-L.
Okay. Where's that?
Gambia, I guess. Gambia.
Gambia. Okay. Sure.
And so they take this trip with multiple stops. They have to stop apparently in six countries flying this puddle jumper to get there by April 1st, right? Because April 1st, this boat is supposed to dock in Banjul in Gambia. And so they get there, and then the boat doesn't dock there because of adverse weather conditions. So now these people are in another godforsaken place. Boat's not there. So then they have to, now apparently they're in the process of making a 2,000 mile subsequent trip to Senegal, which is obviously a lovely place, where the cruise will be stopping next week. So
I gotta stop you. So let's review the bidding. These folks are on this cruise. Mm-hmm. They stop at this island off the coast of West Africa.
Yes.
And they somehow screw up the timing. The captain knows that he has passengers who are late, doesn't care, right? He's got a schedule to keep. And you can argue, you know, whether or not that's the right thing to do. I don't know. I mean, obviously, you've got other people on the boat who will want to continue with the cruise they've paid for. You know, perhaps their vacation should not be hijacked by the people who can't make it back to the dock on time. I don't know the answer to that. But regardless, these folks find themselves on this island off the coast of West Africa, no boat. Okay. So their solution to this problem is to start hopping by air all over the coastal countries of Western Africa, hoping to catch up
with the boat that left them. Yeah.
That has already left them.
Once.
Correct. Right. Why? But I would like to think if you and I somehow found ourselves in this situation, we're on an island off the coast of West Africa, and we're supposed to get on a boat of some sort, and we go to the dock, and guess what? No boat. Mm-hmm. Right? I would like to think at that point, you and I would look at each other on the dock. Mm-hmm. I would say, David, there appears to be no boat here. You would say, Brad, I agree. And then what we would do is, you know, sort of falling in line with these folks, we would book a flight, but that flight would take us home, right?
Yeah.
We would just go home. I would say, David, why don't we just go home? And you would say, Brad, that sounds like a splendid idea. And we would book a flight that took us nowhere near another West African country and just brought us back home. Well, why would these people not do that?
I have no idea. I don't know. I wouldn't. Why would you want to get back? Maybe because I don't know how long the cruise was. That's, you know, that's not spelled out, but maybe they wanted to get on the boat, have the cruise, get on the, you know, they cruises, as you know, are known for buffets.
Yeah, that's my understanding, but I don't, again, yeah, I'm not following the whole thing. You would like to have think that they would have learned a lesson about, you know, sort of the value of their presence on the boat, right? Like, you would have liked to think that they would have said to themselves, well, clearly this cruise that we have booked, they don't care about us. And again, they may have been 100% at fault, right? They may have been told 100 times, you need to be back at the dock by, you know, 4 p.m. because the ship is sailing at that point. And they said, yeah, whatever. And they went off and did their own thing, and they showed up at 5. And you know what? That's what happens. Boat's gone. You're an hour late. You were told. I get all that. But at that point, I just don't follow the whole, well, you know, we're going to get back on the, unless you're getting on the boat so that you can just, you know, paintbrush the captain, right? Unless you're saying, look, I want to get back on the boat for just a minute here so I can just wallop this guy that abandoned me on this, you know, coastal island. That I can sort of understand, but I still think I would just go back to my house, write the whole thing off.
So it also could be, Brad, that one of the, you know, they have these fancy dinners where they have like elaborate buffets, but really fancy to the extent where sometimes you get to sit at the captain's table. So maybe the reason they're all catching up to the boat is because they haven't had their turn with the captain yet. And now they want to sit down and break bread with them. And maybe it's worth it to them to travel through these wretched places on multiple turboprops to give him a piece of their mind, or maybe they just want to have the meal and have the prestige of sitting at the captain's table.
And I guess you could combine both. I mean, you could wall up the guy and then sit at his table while he just sort of holds his face in a napkin. I suppose you could do that, kind of kill two birds, as we say. And that may be the case, buddy. It may be that it is, for one reason or another, truly worth it to catch up with a boat that is clearly dodging you. Right. I mean, I'm not buying the, oh, weather was bad off the coast of the Gambia. I'm not, you know, we're not going to be able to dock the boat. I'm not buying it. For whatever reason, the captain of this boat has said, nope, these people are not getting back on board. Perhaps he knows he's going to get walloped, and, you know, he's just not going to allow it. And as you and I both know well from, I mean, you are a boat owner yourself, and your boat has a captain who is affectionately known as Stubby. And once we push off from the dock, Stubby is the absolute master of his domain. He could marry people, right? He is the law, judge, jury, and executioner.
Corporal punishment, and whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, whatever he wants to do. And if he doesn't want to dock the boat, he's not docking the boat.
No, that's right.
And sometimes when he docks the boat, he runs into the dock and he doesn't care because it's on his boat.
It's not his boat at all.
Yeah.
It is not. You know, you want to hear an interesting story about him?
Yeah.
Em and I were out the other night at dinner. We went to dinner at this new place in town, this little Italian place, which is actually really good. And we go to this place in town, and Stubby and Roberta are there.
And Stubby, nice.
He's now 80 something years old, 82, 83 years old. Looks better than he ever has. Looks great. He said he can no longer captain the boat because of his ticker, but he was sitting there with Roberta. And I did notice that he had 4 espresso martinis, and then he finished his meal off with what appeared to be some sort of a cordial on the rocks. So, you know, I mean, I guess you get to be that old and you're a captain. You can do whatever the hell you want.
On the boat, off the boat, doesn't matter. No one can question him. If he wants to have a bucket full of espresso martinis, that man can do it. And if he wants to top it all off with an old fashioned or even a Shirley Temple, whatever he chooses to do, he's the captain of the boat. He can do it. And that is relevant because, much like Stubby, the captain of this cruise liner, he's not taking these people back on board. He's not doing it.
Not doing it. Next, there is this new gender study out about children.
Oh, good.
15 year gender study. Being done by researchers in the Netherlands. Of course, the Netherlands, yes, known for its
tulips, wooden shoes.
So, you know, tulips used to be currency. Did you know that?
I did not know that. They used tulips to use them used to like whip a tulip out of your wallet, tip
tulip
somebody.
Tulip bulbs used to be treated as currency in the Netherlands.
Bulbs. Okay. Well, that makes sense. The whole country's below sea level, which is, you know, generally speaking, a bad idea. But in any case,
I mean, that is what it is. But anyway, that's something that's interesting. But this group out of the Netherlands basically conducts this 15-year study of kids there, 2,700 kids from age 10 to their mid-20s. And basically they're trying to find out if the feelings that people have about their gender, assigned at birth by God, they change over time. And so apparently 11% of kids in the Netherlands out of this 2,700 said that they were unhappy with their gender, right? When they're adolescents. Mm-hmm. And then over time, they're asked this question all the time. And then at the mm-hmm. end, it turns out that about 20% of that 11% are no longer unhappy. 20 to 25% are no longer unhappy with their gender, it's actually an interesting study that people can maybe focus on in this country as we try to give kids who can't vote, can't drive a car, can't drink a beer, the ability to allow a doctor to hack them up like some sort of Frankenstein because they are not happy at that point in time with their gender. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, it is interesting, buddy. And I would even argue that it is, you know, somewhat commonsensical, right? You ask an 11-year-old if they're happy with any particular thing. Hey, are you happy with your house? There's going to be a significant percentage that say, no, you know what? I'm not really happy with my house. And then what do you do then? Burn it down? Because the 11-year-old said, I'm not happy with my house. Or you ask the kid, hey, your mom's making, you know, whatever, beef stroganoff for dinner. Are you happy about that? Yeah, there's gonna be a certain percentage of kids who just say, hey, you know what? I'm not down for the beef stroganoff. So you just hurl it in the mom's face and just say, hey, you know what? Your 11-year-old is not on board with beef stroganoff tonight, mom. So, you know, you're out, right? I mean, it is the dumbest thing to take a pre-adolescent child or even an adolescent child and ask them their opinion of anything and then base anything off of that, right? I mean, to your point, there's a reason that they don't vote. There's a reason that they don't drive. There's a reason that we don't allow them to consume alcohol. We also don't allow them to skip school, right? I mean, that's called truancy. You're required to go and get an education, even though at some point, every child, to include one David Pridham and one Brad Sheaf, at one point went to their parents and said, I don't feel like going to school today. And luckily for both of us, all our combined sets of parents has looked at us and said, oh, yeah, that right? Get your ass to school, right? I mean, that's what happened. It's what should have happened. The idea that you would go to a child and say, how you feeling about your gender today, right? And the kid just looks at you and goes, what? You know, like you're a boy, right? Yeah. Well, how do you feel about being a boy? I don't know. I mean, it's okay. Well, do you love it? Well, I don't know. I mean, I never thought about it. Mom, dad, doctor, you know, it's not something I contemplate. I'm 11. Well, yeah, but do you love it? Well, no, I guess, you know, do you ever think about being a girl? Do you ever think about that? Well, I don't know, maybe once. Okay. Well, let's wheel you into surgery. Right. I mean, it is nuts. And the fact that someone thinks they have to do a 15-year study to show that it's nuts is in and of itself nuts. But I guess I'm glad they did it.
I am too. I mean, yeah. I think the society is so polarized about this issue, and I just don't see it. I there are so many things, so many restraints you can put on kids, literally as well as
figuratively.
Figuratively, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems to me that if there's any potential for changing one's mind, mm-hmm. and if it's a very young mind that's still being formed, it's probably mm-hmm. best to wait to hack them up. Next, Tiger Woods, listen to this. So Tiger Woods has self-imposed on himself a sex ban as he sharpens his focus on Augusta. He's banned all sex, I believe, for him and anyone in his posse until the tournament is over. And it could be over for him on Friday, mm-hmm. considering that he's like 50 years old and kind of, you know, since that car wreck, not very good at golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe that's good for Tiger. He does, you know, seem to have struggled with, you know, his affinity for sex in the past. One may go so far as to say he may be a sex addict, whatever that means. And so maybe this is a wise choice for him. But again, the world's a weird place when, you know, a public figure, the likes of Tiger Woods, feels it appropriate or necessary or relevant to announce, I'm gonna ban myself from sex. Right? Like when you said that to me, my first, you know, sort of mental response was, you know, just to sigh, because, you know, Tiger Woods is another one of these folks who's got to find a way to get himself in the public eye. And then B, just say, well, who cares, Tiger? Who cares what you do with your sex life? The only reason anyone pays any attention to you, because you don't seem to be a particularly pleasant human being, is because you at one point in time were really good at the game of golf, and good for you. Right? I mean, tip of the cap, that is a gift. It is a blessing. You used it well. You were very popular. You, of course, you know, ruined that for yourself through your own behavior and decisions that you made. But now at some point in time, at this point in time, quite frankly, you think it is appropriate to say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ban myself from sex. Who cares, Tiger? Get out on the golf course and hit the ball. And if you are good enough at hitting a little ball that isn't moving, it's just lying there on the grass waiting for you to hit it. If you're good enough at that to continue to draw the public eye, good for you. Try to be a good person, you know, as a result of your success. But who cares whether Tiger Woods is choosing to have sex or not? Like, how do we get to the point where that's what's news?
I think it's just the way that people look at things. Obviously, they follow him. He obviously, his life, people love it now because his life is a train wreck. So any tidbit of news about Trump, look at that Freudian slip about Trump.
So you're doing it. You're turning it into a Trump story. About, you know whose fault it is that Tiger Woods? It's clearly Donald Trump's. If it weren't for Donald Trump, Tiger Woods could have all the sex he wants and be a nice person and hit the golf ball really far and accurately. But because of Donald Trump, Tiger Woods sucks and he can't have sex.
So two more things. I know we're up against the clock. Two more things real quick that are sort of time sensitive. One, Trouble in Paradise. Brett, I know you didn't like talking about this last week, and so I didn't want to bring it up till the end, but obviously the joined Hensel twins, who are in the middle of a throuple marriage with Josh Bowling, of course, the U.S. Army veteran, who I think you know. There's Trouble in Paradise. He's married to one of the two conjoined twins. Again, it begs all sorts of questions, but you didn't like where we went down that road last week, so I'm not going to do it. But this is new. This is net new information, so I figured we had to explore. Right, yeah. He's been hit, and I guess the elopement of these two happened in November of 2021, and it just came out, right? So he's been married to the conjoined twins since then, but they just announced it. And apparently, he was married to another woman. And
not conjoined to anyone,
not conjoined to anyone, a woman with one, you know, all her own stuff. And he has now been hit with a paternity suit because apparently he has like a child with this other woman. So it seems like what we thought was paradise and what we thought was the perfect husband for the twins, or at least one of them, is not so, because he has a child and apparently a wife. And then finally, Donald Trump, the Bible that he's selling is a King James edition, but it also has additional content. It has it's called the God Bless the USA Bible. It includes a copy of the US Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and handwritten lyrics to Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA. So that's all bundled together for $60.
Well, it would be a bargain at any price, buddy, but you know, getting all that for $60, I'm what a steal. Does it come with a free set of knives or no?
No, I think that's the more advanced version, which
you have to level up to get the knives.
It's just not in the cards. But anyway, there it is.
Yeah, you could probably make a fairly solid case that you shouldn't be monetizing scripture to support your political campaign. One could probably make that case. But there are so many things that one could probably make a case about against every single national politician and many state and local politicians that you know, you just don't want to start, because once you start, you can't stop, buddy. You're in a runaway train going downhill.
Downhill.
And yeah, you don't. So we're just, I just don't want to do it. I don't like it. I don't like either of the candidates that are apparently going to be, you know, the major political candidates for presidency. I don't.
You don't like RFK's running mate?
I mean, again, buddy, here you go. I mean, here's a gal who, to my knowledge, was not previously involved in politics. Right. So her first entree into politics is that she has been asked by RFK to be his running mate for the office of the vice presidency as he competes for the presidency. Fine. That's all fine. That's the way we do it. That's legitimate. But does it surprise anyone that a person who was selected for this position agreed to it and has now involved herself in the political arena, has this kind of a background where she supposedly married a guy because she loved him, I guess. I mean, there was some attraction between the two of them. They got married. They stood in front of a religious or civil or both figure, made vows, got married, and under 4 weeks later, mm-hmm. after having met a billionaire, she's
27 days out. Fraud. Yeah. She's fraud. Out.
Fraud on the husband. Yeah. I'm going with the billionaire.
Yes.
And then cheats on that billionaire with another billionaire. Mm-hmm. Does it surprise anyone that this person winds up in politics? Those are the quality of humans that we find in the political arena.
It's not what we're looking for.
It's not, buddy. It's just not.
Well, this was exhausting. It's like giving birth, I guess. I would know what it's like, but it's exhausting.
Well, buddy, you know, there we are. We find ourselves at the end of another podcast. You and I have left the cruise ship. The cruise ship has left us. We're looking at it sailing off into the distance. But you know what we're not going to do, pal? We're not going to travel around the coast of West Africa chasing it. We're going to go home. Mm-hmm.
They can have our stuff.
They can have it. There's more stuff.
Yeah.
We're going home. We're going back to our families, where we're going to rest, relax, and prepare to bring you yet another podcast next week right here on IP Frequently.
This has been IP Frequently. Once again, clearing a forest of lies with the machete of truth. You're welcome.